so a pastor's kid feels intuitively like my greatest job is to protect my dad.
My siblings and I have talked about that in group texts, like growing up. It was never asked of us, but it felt like, and these are feelings, it felt like protecting dad was the ultimate goal. Like that was most of what our energy and time was spent toward, of that image was important.
Welcome back to another episode of The Glass House. I'm Angie Elkins, producer of the show, and today Ben and Lindley are winding up our series on what it's like to grow up in the glass house. We've got two of our Lifeway team members that they are chatting with. We actually recorded this live at the SBC last year, so you're going to hear a lot of noise in the background, but we're chatting with Tyler Litton and Heather Brzezinski. So many of you may have heard Tyler on an episode when he was on with his dad, Ed Litton, earlier in the year. We'll link to that in the show notes, but we've also got a couple of other episodes about growing up in the glass house that just aired. If you have not listened to the episode with Kelly Minter or our other Lifeway team members, Shelley and Joel, you'll want to go back and hear those. But today we're closing it out with some unique experiences about what it's like to grow up in the glass house. Here are Ben and Lindley, along with Heather and Tyler.
How do we help our kids survive the ministry? And we are calling into the booth here all the pastor's kids we know to say, tell us one story from your past where you remember your parents walking through a hard moment with grace or something that marked you.
I mean, several Lifeway employees. So the first one here is Tyler Litton. He's going to tell us maybe a story from his past that he remembers.
Yeah, like one that comes to mind that I think was fairly formative is as a pastor's kid, just a very different way to grow up. There's a lot of different opinions about what it should look like and what it mm-hmm. shouldn't look like, and a lot of what it shouldn't look mm-hmm. like. And so as a good pastor's kid, I remember being involved in my giftings, which was drama for the most part.
You were that guy.
I was that guy.
No thespian.
No happy hands. That's right. But maybe. maybe the goal would be being able to play Jesus like in the play at church one day. That's the Marlon Brando of Southern Baptist. And I remember being in some kind of a skit. I don't remember what it was, but it required me to go to multiple services. And this was the first time that I had kind of been in the back.
Yeah.
Behind everything and seeing
what's behind the curtain
and the worship pastor running around last minute making changes. And there was a screen back there so we could see everything going on. I remember watching my dad's sermon twice, and I remember him getting to the same point in the sermon and choking up and crying twice at the exact same moment. And I don't think it occurred to me at that moment, the feeling that I had, and as an adult can kind of see it a little bit more clearly, that it rang as false to me, and it rang as performative,
interesting,
and insincere. And, you know, those are the things that you carry into the most judgmental times in your life as being a teenager and being brutally unfair.
My dad was a religious actor.
You know, I think that was the secret that I didn't feel like I could tell anybody. And I don't think it was true, but it was something that I felt like in that moment I saw something and it was my duty to protect it. And I would say that wasn't the only example, obviously, as being a pastor's kid. You witness a lot.
Hypocrisy. You saw hypocrisy in your own father.
I think...
Well, maybe not.
I don't know if that's what I'm saying. I think I interpreted it as that.
He could have been that the spirit was moving in the moment both times, but you felt like, how can that be?
I think in a young,
yeah,
underdeveloped mind, that's what I saw, and that's how I interpreted it. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think at that moment I would have called it that. It was just dissonance.
Great word.
Yeah. And I think that's probably my message to pastors' kids is if you can learn the difference in that dissonance, what's you and what's something else, or what's a part of the denomination you're in, there are things that, you know, your parents and grown-ups are still trying to suss out and figure out what role they can play in that, and what's the thing they've been given in life to kind of carry and deal with. It's hard. There's a lot expected of you to figure out if it's not painfully spelled out for you.
Mm. That's good.
I want to ask you about something.
Oh, no.
And when it's over, if you tell me, don't use any of that.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay.
One of the most powerful moments, I'm not kidding you, of my ministry was sitting across from your dad, who is Ed Litton, and asking him to share about what he learned through the accusations about plagiarism.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
Oh, man, it hurt a lot. I think to further the thread, I don't do Twitter. That was the only time in my life that I made a fake Twitter account with a fake name so that I could
go.
I wanted to see what people had said and were saying. And it felt like that secret that I was supposed to carry about who my dad really was had blown up. And that
now everybody knows.
Now everybody knew it.
Oh, wow.
And the thing I was supposed to protect him about, my siblings and I have talked about that in group texts, like growing up, it was never asked of us, but it felt like, and these are feelings, it felt like protecting dad was the ultimate goal. Like that was most of what our energy and time was spent toward. That image was important.
Hold on. So a pastor's kid feels intuitively like my greatest job is to protect my dad.
So here's a really embarrassing story.
Yeah.
I remember my mom was out of town, and it was just me and my dad. And I don't remember where my other siblings were, but this happened like never. And we went to Blockbuster. and I remember there was some movie I really wanted to rent, and it looked a little more violent. And my dad had said, like, you can pick whatever you want. He's like, maybe not anything you want. And he wound up picking, like, this Noah movie that starred Liam Neeson. And he was like, this is a good movie. And I was like, all right. But in it, they talk about sex. And I was not old enough, I guess, in his mind to have that conversation. And I remember knowing what it was, hearing them talk about it, and pretending like I was asleep. And after the scene had passed, pretended to wake up so that he didn't have to tell me.
You were protecting him from being uncomfortable.
I was protecting him from being uncomfortable to not have to give me the talk right then and there.
Wow.
Maybe self-defense as well. Maybe I just also didn't want to be bummed out like that.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like the royal family, only in like a ministry setting. Like,
sure.
The royal family has to protect the perception of the king or the queen.
Sure.
And the family's expected to keep the family secrets.
Yeah.
So when that happened with your dad and the YouTube video went up,
right,
and there was no denying what he had done.
Honestly, the first thing that I thought was like, that dude can memorize.
Your dad?
Yeah. I was like, that's verbatim. Like, that is incredible.
Well, did you call him immediately?
No.
Did you say anything to him?
I did. I wish I could remember exactly, but I know we talked about it. And I think the first thing I wanted to do was signal to him, like, obviously, I think this is unfair. I'm not even going to weigh in on whether it's true or not. But I think there were some very bad faith actors talking about plagiarism and very high-minded about not realizing that literally the entirety of public speaking surrounding the Bible is plagiarism built off of, you know, the people and saints that
the
came before.
The secret of originality is that's forgetting right. Where you got it.
That's right. That's right. Where you go.
Every
blessed
preacher in some way is plagiarizing and sharing somebody else's idea.
Yeah.
And you can't cite everybody.
You can't.
It's annoying.
And so if that's the argument, then obviously it's ridiculous. But obviously also what he did is a little different.
Well, he owned it. I mean,
sure.
That's why that moment was so powerful. Like, he just absolutely owned it.
Yeah.
And talked about how his own insecurity
yeah.
as a aging preacher is what made him want to go and try to be like a younger preacher.
Right.
And I just know, like, if that were my dad, I just don't know how would I have handled the emotion. How did you handle the emotion?
How did I handle the emotion?
Did you want to respond on Twitter?
No, I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I think more than anything, I began praying pretty fervently that he would step down, that it would stop. I think watching him go through it.
You wanted him to quit.
I wanted him to quit. And then 5 seconds later, I'd be like, but I know that there are good things happening. So maybe just shut up and go sit in the corner for a minute and be Ed Litton's son. Lose your identity some.
All right. Last thing on this, yeah. Then we're coming to you. Let's say your dad's listening to this episode.
Oh, I'm sure.
And your voice comes in the end and you're a voice of grace. Like, how would you encourage your dad? Like, what would be some things you'd like to say to him? Because he told us that he thinks about this almost every day.
I believe it. I would say that your ability to be original or interesting or thoughtful is not your identity. I think being a beautiful and loving father is more important to me. I think that's how I think of you, and that's how, if I wanted the world to see something, that's more interesting to me than, you know, a compelling and captured public speaker.
So well said, Tyler.
Thanks, guys.
Heather Brzezinski is my executive assistant, which sounds fancy.
It really does.
You are fancy.
It is.
You're
kind
a, big
of a big deal.
Yeah. She's a
kind
big
of
deal.
A big deal.
But she also has a last name that Siri has no idea how to pronounce.
Brzezinski.
Right. Heather was a pastor's daughter, whom we have grown to love.
Yes.
What is a memory from something your dad endured as a pastor, and he and your mom had to suffer through it? You saw it. What happened?
I would say it was his last pastorate, because he had to retire for health reasons sooner than you would think a pastor would need to retire. And it was very difficult to walk through that with him. I was actually a freshman in college when that all started happening. I took a semester off and moved with them when they moved away to get them settled and everything. And then just to watch that, and also just to watch his health go, was not easy either. So
he didn't want to retire.
Yeah. And what I love about it now, as you know, they live with me now. So I get to see him, like, I walk in all the time and he's reading scripture out loud, almost like he's preaching to someone. And then I see him on his knees praying. So he still has a ministry. It's just not leading a church, which is that's a great thing.
That's like that in the Shaping of a Christian Family, where she talks about having, Elizabeth Elliot talks about seeing her dad praying for them often.
I would also say, where Tyler said he felt like he had to protect, I felt that too. I also feel that in my job with you.
Interesting.
That I have to protect you. So
it's almost like you were trained for this job.
Yeah.
Growing up a pastor's kid.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to ask you about, you guys moved a lot.
Yeah.
So I know that's one thing that people are like, I don't want to be a pastor's kid, because you may have moved a lot, Tyler. I don't know. But once, okay. But people fear it, because moving and kids being adaptable. I mean, tell all the different places you guys went.
So we were in North Mississippi for several years. Then we actually left that very established church, and kind of like y'all, although we went to an established church, it was a very small church in Idaho. That was a great ministry to watch build up and flourish. And then we moved back to Mississippi for his final.
Okay. But those were during your high school years.
Yes. We moved back to Mississippi my senior year of high school.
Was it traumatic?
No. Not for me. I mean, I was excited.
The people who fear moving kids and say, you know, past elementary age, we can't move them. They have to be stable. You don't agree with that. That was not your story.
No, I loved the adventure of moving and meeting new people.
And today you're a big traveler.
I am.
You like experiencing new environments.
I do. Yeah.
As long as they have Disney in the title.
So we have another pastor's kid waiting. I want you to tell me the truth, and if you lie, God knows. If you could go back.
Who are you talking to?
Both of them.
Okay.
If you could go back and change what your dad did for a living and be a normal kid, would you do it?
I wouldn't.
Why?
I mean, it made me who I am, so I don't, unless you guys don't like me this way.
So you feel like it was all part of making you who you are?
Yeah.
And even the hard parts were part of your story?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tyler, you don't look like you agree, and I kind of like that.
Oh, you know, you can't get a straight answer out of me. If it was just me and I was hermetically sealed, I would say, yeah, I think there could have been other things he would have done. I don't even know what those are, though. So
that
like,
would be less painful.
That would probably be less painful, but honestly, I don't think life works that way. I think that you're kind of destined for that, no matter which route you pick. But then, when I take 5 seconds to think about the sheer amount of people he's helped and have blessed, it just means I had to share my dad and allow him to be a father to a lot of other people. And maybe that's something that I still haven't fully reconciled with. So my final answer is
no.
I don't think he should have done anything else. Okay. But you can have, you know, we hold paradox. We hold the things that don't really seem to fit together and just hope that people get the humanity.
Shelley can wait because I thought of one more question.
Yeah.
If you don't want to talk about it, I understand.
Okay.
What was it like losing your mom? And did you feel mad at God?
Yeah.
For taking her?
How old were you?
17.
Wow.
18?
One of the worst times to lose your mom.
It was, it was and it wasn't. I think it was worse for my sister, who was 13. So being a, you know, a budding young woman and then having two older brothers and a pastor to navigate that, I can't say we did her justice.
Interesting.
She's turned out great. That sounds like it's a tragedy. I just have regrets about, you know.
You didn't think you were there for her?
I tried to be. I think I had limitations.
Year old boy doesn't know how.
I mean, I can't be a mom, but I think I wanted to find every possible way to be that for her. I'll get past the obvious of the heartbreak and the devastation and the death of mom, past, present, and future. Like, it's not just I don't get to go forward with her anymore. It shades everything differently, and grief just hangs over you like a specter. I think there were some really hard conversations as we and a lack of hard conversations in other ways where we swept a lot under the rug and just said, please just get by. I remember anger was just a constant companion in our house, not only for me, but for my dad, obviously.
The house got tense.
The house was almost unlivable.
Wow.
For a time. I'd cry over the dumbest things. A cheap $20 American Eagle cologne that she got me, like the bottle broke, and just like falling to my knees, like weeping. because it's just another thing that's gone. I think that I left the faith like for a time.
You did?
Yeah, I mean, I fully deconstructed. I think I was a closeted atheist for a bit. I really didn't want this thing.
You went C.S. Lewis.
I was gone.
You're full on C.S. Lewis.
I was gone. And I hate some of the neat and tidy narratives that we put on people's faith because it's messy and it's deeply, deeply personal and tied up with so many things about your upbringing and your emotional palette. And so I want to wrap it up, but I want to at least allude to the fact that it was not a neat and tidy, clean thing, as I obviously then went to Union University, a good Southern Baptist university, and started working at Lifeway and was a good Southern Baptist little boy. But there was a moment, like 2016, like my first son had been born, where I was driving in a car that my father-in-law lent me because our other one was in the shop, and I have no idea how it got in there, but there was a CD of my mom singing at our choir growing up, a song called Come Home. And I remember thinking in that moment, like, I don't know if I could ever live with myself letting her down about giving up my faith.
Mm. Wow.
So even if I can just start there and say, I'm just going to do it for her, it was kind of the closest thing I'd gotten to taking my own faith at that point. I think that's the obvious issue pastors' kids have.
I think
is being given something.
Would be so proud of you.
I hope so.
I think she is so proud of you.
I hope so.
You still think about her every day?
Yeah. Oh yeah. The biggest beauty and tragedy is having children and knowing that they'll never get to know her this side of heaven. But I see her in them every day as well. And it's probably the closest I've gotten to being able to reconnect with her in a weird way, is just seeing these children who never knew her, have no reason to exhibit traits that they do, and say, oh, yep, that's mom.
That's so cool. Yeah. What's one part of her personality that shows up in you?
Dissent. I love being the fly in the ointment. I like playing devil's advocate to a fault. I will typically take up for the person who has no voice, maybe doesn't even want a voice, and just be like, what about that guy over there? And so humor is a big way that sarcasm is a big thing. My siblings and I, like, that's every bit of
that's
it.
That's mom.
That's mom.
And every time you stand up for something, you're like, mom would want me to say something right now.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think that's where I'm really proud of my dad, because I think he found that in the last couple of years through the Unify Project and with some of the racial reconciliation work that they've been doing. I think it's taken a while, but I think he found
that something
thing
that he truly believes in.
Yeah, and I believe him.
Yeah. Can't wait to see your video. I haven't watched it yet, but I heard it's awesome.
It's fine.
Well, that was unexpected.
Wait, I want to ask though. You don't have to go here.
Here it comes.
Your side of the table has suffered much more grief than Ben and I's side.
Yes.
You've lost two people really special to you, like very close. Did you go through, it's interesting how different people go through different seasons. Did you go through a season of just kind of questioning your faith?
I actually didn't.
Okay.
So that was interesting to hear.
Well, I think that's, I mean, what you said so beautifully is that everybody has a story about it. And so,
in fact, when Rob was the guy that I was dating, when he passed away, I had just finished, I don't know if you guys know this, I just finished Beth Moore's Bible study. It was the only one I've ever done of hers, called Breaking Free. And I kept coming back to, his name kept coming up in it. And I finished it a week before he passed away. And I didn't know why his name was in it. I was like, well, I don't know what you want me to do with this. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm breaking free from. But then, like, as soon as he was gone, I thought, okay, I think you might have been preparing me for this moment. Mm-hmm. And so that actually made it strong, my faith stronger. Mm. And then when Andy passed away, I had already experienced that. So
Andy's your brother.
Andy's my brother.
It's okay.
That one's fresher.
And was not just your brother, but a dear friend, a companion.
Mm. Yep. Best friends. Thanks. Yeah, that was it was different. But God's still good. Like, I always was able to cling to that, even in the toughest parts of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How have you stayed so not bitter? Your life has not turned out the way you would have written it. I mean, come on.
No, I know, but
you would have loved for Rob to still be alive. You would have loved for Ian. I have never, Heather, in all my years of working with you, detected 1 ounce of bitterness.
I don't know what it would do. I don't think it would. It's not helpful to be bitter about it. I mean, it is life. I mean, you lose people. That's just part of it. Mm-hmm. So I had an interesting conversation with Andy's ex-wife. Like, on the year anniversary of his death, she called me. She was a total wreck. Also, I don't know that we can use that. She probably won't ever hear this. But she's not a believer. And she could see the difference. I mean, she kept saying, how are you managing this so well? And so I was able to witness to her. And I honestly told her, I said, you know why I can do this, because of my relationship with the Lord. So I've loved seeing that I can perhaps make a difference in someone's life because of how I've been able to handle the grief.
Mm. That's really good.
Wow.
Andy's proud of you.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Well, now we're all crying.
That was heavy and yet so beautiful.
So good.
The Glass House is brought to you by Lifeway. It is produced and edited by Angie Elkins with help from William Hall. Sound engineering by Donnie Gordon. Artwork by Heather Brzezinski. And photography by Rebecca McVeigh.